Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, December 2nd, 2022. As always, we are grateful to everyone who's joining us today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice. If you go to the website whyagain.org and click on the link that says Start Here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotion that I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. Everything is available there. You can click on a link and download the PDF file of the actual worksheet process itself. You can click on a series of audio files that contain the recordings of shows just like this one where people have called in and been stepped through that worksheet process. If you choose to listen to them, they will serve as a tutorial for you and help you get maximum benefit from these tools in the minimum amount of time. And you can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app. It contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. It contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. It also has access to the commitments, and it's a way through that app, anytime on any page of that app, it allows you to send a question to Jeannie Rice. So if you are not available to call the internet show, if you're using the app and have a question, you can use it to send a question to Jeannie Rice, and then she'll address the question either directly to an email to you or on the internet show, and then let you know what day and time your question was addressed. You can also email us. You can email me directly at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And we will do our best to address your comments, questions, answers, or testimonials on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a note letting you know what day and time we addressed your your question or comment, and so you can listen back and hear the feedback. And we're hopeful that people do all of that soon and often, because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives. And it also is gratifying for people like Michael and Jeannie Rice, who spend so much time and effort on this work, when they get the feedback that it's helping people. That's their intention with this work, with this internet show, with maintaining the website, et cetera, is to be of service, is to help create a better place for all of us to be living. And so feedback's appreciated. And you can donate if you're so inclined. There's a donate button on their website. And we hope that if this is being of use to you and you have the financial wherewithal, that you consider supporting them in that work. So our call-in number, if you want to give us some feedback or ask a question or ask for support, is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we'll have a conversation. It'll put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. I'm a little bit distracted because I just finished a very intense session, and I just got a note from somebody about some very intense stuff that's going on for people. And I'm sitting in an office where we have mice. So I have all kinds of things going on here to distract me. But we hope you are following along these tools that I have been using to great effect for over 18 years. I have experienced them to be life-changing. I have had feedback from, now it's into the hundreds of people that I've exposed to these tools, either through my private practice or through these internet shows or through the support groups. These tools can demonstrate to us directly our agency, our role in creating our emotions and responses. And once I demonstrate to myself sufficiently over time that I'm actually creating the emotions that I'm experiencing, then when I realize I don't really like this, this is not pleasant, I don't think this is leading to productive options and behaviors for me, then I know where to look within my own choices, my own use of mind energy, my own interpretations about life, to change what my role in the creation of that experience, so that I have the option of getting different and hopefully more preferable results. Last night we had a support group and we were listening to Michael Singer. And he has a series of lectures that he did related to the book that he wrote. And the book he wrote was The Untethered Soul. And as a spiritual teacher for a lot of years, Michael Singer put some of the best stuff he had at the time in his book, The Untethered Soul, which I hesitate to call a book a classic, but I do know that most of the people that I encounter who are doing deep spiritual work have either heard of that book or they've read it themselves. And what we're listening to in the support group is 11 hours worth of lectures that he did doing a deeper dive. It's very similar to the darshans that J.M. did a number of years after he channeled the or received the information that became the Way of Mastery. that was received and written down and recorded and then written down from 1994 to 1997. And then in 2011, he decided to do a series of teachings over the internet. He was in his ashram in Bali, or an ashram in Bali. He didn't own it, but he was there. And he would do hour-long talks going very slowly through, even more slowly through the Way of Mastery than we have been going this past year. And what we listened to last night was Michael Singer basically doing the same kind of thing on his book. He wrote the book, The Untethered Soul, and now there are 11 hours of lecture he's giving on the finer points, the critical points, the most life-changing points of that book. And the essence of his teaching last night was, in previous hours of talk, he would talk about the mind and what is the mind and what is your mind. And it's an energy field, and energy moves through that field. And the mind is not who you are. You are the consciousness that can be aware of the mind. And then after he did plenty of talking about the mind and examples of the mind and how it flips and changes, and your essence does not flip and change. Your ability to observe things is rock solid. It's that part of you that was there when you were 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 years old and remains there today, even though you might be decades away from that and your body looks nothing like it did when you were 4 or 5 years old. There's an essence in you that remains the same. And that's who you truly are, that essence of awareness, that consciousness, that soul, that spirit, whatever words you want to use. And that essence of you as an observer can watch the movement of thought through your mind. And the way Guy Finley says it is, you learn to step back and watch the movement of your thought without being moved by your thought. You're aware enough to understand that your thoughts are not you, and if you have a thought, oh, gee, I should punch that person, you don't have to do it. You have discretion. You have will, spiritual faculty. You have choice. So after he did a good deal of talk about the mind, then he moved over to talk about what is the heart. The heart is another energy center. And the heart is capable of feeling things, creating sensations. He talks about it as though it's a musical instrument or an orchestra that can play tunes, that can make energetic impressions that are beyond what the conscious logical mind can predict or understand or direct. It's just, and he talks about it as a vector of energy. Now, if you haven't had a lot of physics, you don't know what that means, but think of it in terms of simply energy moving in a particular direction. And that's what our hearts do. Our hearts are these energy centers, and they can experience small amounts or large amounts of energy moving in a particular direction. And when that happens and we experience it, it can be very intense. It can take us to a peak emotional experience where we feel bliss and union with all of creation and joy and happiness and aliveness. And it can take us to the depths of despair and crushing grief and hurt and confusion. And yet, we don't have to go with it. We can step back and observe that. And that was the core of the talk last night, which, oddly enough, was very, very similar to what Guy Finley was talking about, the lecture we listened to Guy Finley give on in the Tuesday group from the previous or Wednesday he gave a talk. And both of these deep spiritual teachers are talking about the importance of stepping back and watching the flow of energy and understanding that's not your true self. Your thoughts are not you. Your emotions are not you. Your heart center is not you. It's an energy field, and there's movement through the energy field, and you can use it as a point of input or an alarm system or information that you use in conjunction with thoughts, in conjunction with direct observation of life circumstances, to allow yourself to respond to life in the most congruent, integrated, loving way. And that might be happening as you're feeling some of the deepest grief, the most intense emotional pain that you've ever experienced. Although that's not what most of us are taught and trained to do. Most of us are taught and trained to run away from that. This brings us to people like M. Scott Peck, who wrote the book A Road Less Traveled. And most people know him for that book. It's a very commonly referenced book, The Road Less Traveled. But he also wrote a book titled The People of the Lie. And The People of the Lie is his work to try and understand how it is that normal everyday people end up doing evil things, hurtful things to other people. And his conclusion was that the only way that happens is when people, normal everyday people, and of course everyone is a normal everyday person, when those people are experiencing a pain or a fear or a sadness that they do not feel capable of or willing to deal with directly inside of themselves, that's when they are moved to do things that end up being hurtful to others around them. They hurt others when they're running from their own pain. And the example that comes to my mind most often when I was reading that book is near the beginning, where there's this person who has obsessive compulsive urges, and his wife finally drags him to the doctor, and the doctor says, you know, welcome, glad you're here, let's talk about this. And he was very resistant. The patient was very resistant to being in therapy, so he was there for a short period of time, and then he left. He said, my gosh, doc, you've cured me. Everything's great. And the obsessive compulsive trait he had was that he'd wake in the middle of the night, and he'd have a thought that he passed a billboard on the way home, driving home from work, and the billboard would say, you just ran over somebody, you just killed somebody, and they're in the bushes behind you. And he'd wake up in the middle of the night, and he would be so obsessed with that thought that he would get dressed and retrace his route to work and stop his car and look alongside the road and look in the bushes to satisfy himself that there wasn't somebody dead in the bushes that he was responsible for. And that's why his wife dragged him to the doctor in the first place. So after a few sessions, he said, oh, I'm cured. Thanks, doc. I don't want it to come anymore. And he disappeared from Dr. Peck's practice. Months later, he showed up again. And the doctor said, wow, it's been a long time. How have you been? Why are you back? And the man said, well, all those things you said to me were so useful that it completely wiped out my obsessive compulsive problem for, you know, weeks or months. And then it started to creep back in. And it got really intense. So now I want you to understand, doctor, that I don't believe in the devil. But I said, devil, if you let me go one more time to check out the billboard and whatever, then I'll never go again. And if I ever go again after this, you can have my soul. So I went, and it was great. the devil didn't take my soul, and I got to prove to myself that there was nobody lying in the bushes, and I was wonderful for weeks and weeks and weeks. Didn't have any problems, didn't wake up in the middle of the night, but then it started to creep back in. And it got so intense that I found myself saying, now, devil, you got to understand, Doc, I don't believe in the devil. But I found myself saying, devil, if you let me go just this one more time, if I ever go again after this, you can have my soul and you can have my son's soul. And he said, that's when I realized I got a problem. If I'm willing to sacrifice my soul, that's one thing. If I'm willing to sacrifice my soul and my son's soul, I should come see you. In our running from our own pain, fear, and sadness, that is how we are so frequently moved to do things that are disruptive, that are hurtful, that are damaging, that are sometimes violent. So, I've had people in my office in the past couple days who've had that very same thing. They're running from their own pain, fear, and sadness, and they've actually started to have thoughts about, you know, in the opposite of the gentle art of blessing, right? They're sitting filled with rage, and they're casting hateful thoughts out at someone. And it's eating them up, and they're miserable, and they feel the tension, and they feel the disturbed sleep, and they wake in the middle of the night, and they're obsessing about the drama and the trauma. And rather than doing the gentle art of blessing that Pierre Pradervan would recommend, which is to see the person in the highest and best and to imagine in your heart space the most loving image you can and genuinely feel the loving energy as you visualize sending it to the other person, these people are doing the opposite of that. They're waking in the middle of the night and they're sending spiteful, hateful thoughts and wishing the other person would not be in existence, etc. And we're recommending pretty much the opposite. We're recommending taking a step back, breathing and softening and watching the movement of our thoughts without being moved by our thoughts. Yes, I may have thoughts that say my pain, my fear, my sadness is all about somebody else. But this work, the reality management worksheet, the work Guy Finley brings us to, the work Michael Singer brings us to, understands this is all an inside job. So when I begin to feel the pain, the fear, and the sadness that I generate in response to outside events, there are things that happen that I'm not causing, right? There are things that happen like a car accident. There are things that happen like a tornado. There are things that happen like, you know, powerful disruptive disease process and arthritis and things like that. And people that I love die. These things happen. The point of this work is when those things happen, I'm the one that chooses what impact I'm going to create in response to those events. I'm the one who chooses the thoughts that I pour enough mind energy into to actually create the emotions that I experience. And then if I say, you know, I don't want to experience this, and I'm blaming someone outside of me for it, now I'm a victim. Because if I can't see how I'm creating it, then I can't see how I might fix it. Whereas if I practice using the Reality Management Worksheet and the other tools available at whyagain.org through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, now I wake up to realize, oh my, when I choose this thought pattern and pour enough of my mind energy into it, I feel this level of upset that I don't enjoy. Well, since I don't enjoy it, let me choose again. Let me choose differently. Let me understand that life is just a flow of energy. And when I label it as bad or wrong, when I say, oh, this is wonderful, I want this to go on forever, I create a response within my system, and nothing else creates that response. One of the things about Michael Singer's talk last night was that he talked at length about how we are going to feel the energies that our hearts create and the energies that move in certain directions through our heart space. Our culture has taught us that certain of these energies are bad or wrong and they shouldn't be happening and it's all somebody else's fault, etc. And yet, our higher spiritual teachers encourage us to do the work of stepping back and observing without panic, without judgment, and demonstrate to ourselves that we can and will live through it, that we can witness it without the judgment. And as we witness without the judgment, we create a different internal experience. One of the ways it's been said is we experience the pain without adding suffering. You may have heard this, you know, pain is part of life, suffering is optional. Suffering is what I create when I resist the flow of life, when I say this is bad or wrong and this shouldn't be happening. When, in fact, it's the flow of life. It is happening. If it's happening, it's the flow of life. And I don't wish to pretend any kind of deep, godlike knowledge. These ideas aren't mine. These are just ideas I'm working with as I read books like The Way of Mastery and The Course in Miracles that we did last year, and Guy Finley's books and Dale Ellen Hoffman's lectures and Michael Rice's lectures, 15 or 16 or 17 videos that he has that we watched over and over again in the support groups. And we're encouraging people. We had some talk yesterday and on Tuesday about the idea that it's so valuable to work with teachings without getting hung up on the teacher, without giving credit to the teacher. Because one way to talk about it is we're all just walking each other home. There's no one who's in a body who knows what you should be doing with your life and who knows what's right or wrong for you to embrace or push away. Or you have to discover that for yourself. I remember one of the talks Dr. Michael Rice used to give, he would talk about the difference between right versus wrong thinking and the way of thinking that says right versus not right for me. And it's just Michael's way of trying to talk about experiencing something and being there, embracing it and experiencing it, and leaving the judgment out of it. But at the same time, making a determination, discerning for yourself what is best for you. And so the example he would give in one of those talks is the idea of a friend of yours calls you up and says, hey, I've got this great inside track on how to pull a bank robbery this weekend, and we're going to walk away with millions, and we just need one more person. Are you in? And Michael says, you know, if a friend of mine calls and says that, I don't want to sit in judgment of them and saying this is bad or wrong and they shouldn't do this. Now, you might say that's just ridiculous, but, you know, at this higher level, at this level of scale and the spiritual truths we're talking about, Michael says, I don't know enough about this person's life. Maybe this person needs a run-in with the police and some time in jail to stimulate them, to correct a long-term family generational pattern or whatever, and maybe this is what they need for their next level of personal growth. That's not for me to decide. What's for me to decide is what's right for me. So Michael says he would probably say to his friend, no thanks, you can leave me out, and, you know, good luck, and then hang up. And then Michael says, now I might also think, I think it's appropriate for me to notify the authorities and let them know that this is going so they can work to keep everybody safe, so nobody gets hurt and the bank isn't robbed, etc. Now, it's a rather extreme example, but it highlights the difference between thinking, I know that it's wrong to rob a bank, and I know this person's doing something that's going to screw up their life. I don't really know that. You know, I was in the field of corrections for the first 7, 9, 12 years, whatever, of my career. And I saw a lot of people whose lives were changed for the better. They were on a destructive path. As a matter of fact, James Pulpura wrote a book, Perception, Seeing is Believing, or whatever. And he's one of those people whose life was really headed for death and destruction, and disruption and violence and drugs. And it was landing himself in jail that was the rock bottom he needed to say, I really have to turn my life around. And he used it as motivation. I'm not saying that you need to do that, that you should go put yourself in jail and then your life will get better. I'm just saying that we don't know what somebody needs, which is one of the teachings from the Way of Mastery. Over and over again, it says, please understand your divine ignorance. You don't know what anything is or is for. You don't know what any of your brothers or sisters need. And that's echoed in the story that Michael Rice would tell about the person who calls up and says, hey, we're going to rob a bank this weekend. Do you want to come with us? Michael says, Michael has learned it's better for Michael to step back and say, I don't know if that's right for you or not, but I know it's not right for me. So I'm not going to call what you're doing wrong. I'm just going to say I'm choosing otherwise. And then I'm going to bless you on your way. I hope that, you know, whatever you're doing leads you to a better life for you and those around you. And if you've alerted me to the fact that you might be doing a bank robbery this weekend, I might call the authorities and alert them so they can keep people safe. So one way of thinking about this is developing this, I don't know what anything is or is for, and I don't know how life is going to turn out better than I could have imagined, especially when it does not go the way that my mind tells me it should. But that leads us directly into Lesson 31. And the title of Lesson 31 is Placing Your Trust and Your Loyalty in Love, capital L, love. And the text reads, beloved and holy friends, as always, and though I have repeated this to you often, I say it to you again and yet again, it is with joy that I come forth to abide with you. For relationship is the holiest of all places. Relationship between any two who choose to look upon each other, having looked within and found no lack, that's what relationship is. Two whole people who see their true nature, who ground themselves in their experience of themselves as the extension of love in form, as part of the flow of life in creation. Two people who feel whole and complete, and they look upon each other. Having looked within and found no lack, for these two can then look out upon each other and see only perfect innocence, only perfect peace, only perfect love, capital L, love. Therefore, it is with joy that I join with you. For I look upon you with perfect peace and perfect love and perfect trust. My loyalty to you is unshakable. No event that occurs in the realm of your space and time can taint the loyalty which I know to the depth of truth, capital T truth, that is your very self, your higher self, your capital S self. That which is unshakable, unchanging, unchangeable, and unchanged forever, that's you, your essence, your consciousness, your soul, your being, whatever you want to call it, is unchanging, unshakable, unchangeable, and unchanged forever. It existed before there was time, before there was form, and it will exist after time, after form. So the text goes on and says, for my loyalty is perfectly pure. My trust of you is unfathomable and immeasurable. How can this be so? For perhaps even now your mind says, well, yes, but last week I got a little angry with my spouse, and 3 weeks ago I forgot to pay for that darn candy bar that I picked up in the store. Since I'm such a horrible person, your loyalty, Yeshua, is misplaced. And yet, my trust in you emerges from my trust in my Father. My trust in you emerges from the perfect knowledge that you belong only to that one that I have called Abba, the flow of life, creation itself. My trust, then, is the expression of what I have come to know as I have looked on into the depth of my own being, both within my physical incarnation that became rather famous, and also since then, where I have discovered the perfection of love that pervades all things and can be seen beneath the surfaces and through the appearances that the body's eyes and the ego's thought system would show you. So think about that. There's a teaching here that says, there's a way to look beyond perception, which is, this book has been driving towards since the first and second lessons. And that paragraph again reads, my trust then is the expression of what I have come to know as I looked into the depth of my own being. So I saw my true nature and I realized that's your true nature. I see that I'm an extension of love expressing in form, and you're an extension of the creative energy of love expressing in form. I found this both with my physical incarnation that became rather famous, and then also since then, where I have discovered the perfection of love that pervades all things. That perfection of love that pervades all things can be seen beneath the surfaces. It's that shimmering radiance behind the perception that our minds show us, behind the appearances that the body's eyes and the ego's thought system would show you. And we've talked at length about how Michael Rice has been hitting this the past few years very strongly. You don't see anything outside of you with your eyes. The images that show up in your mind, our neuroscience tells us this, is 80% images from our past. It's a manufactured image. It's an illusion, a hallucination, a delusion. It's your best guess about what's going on in the outside world, but only about 20% of it is coming from the stimulation of the light waves that hit your eyes. 20% of the images your mind shows you are coming from your past. This is why you can look at somebody in a party and there'll be 50 people in the room of the party and there's somebody sitting in the corner or they're standing talking to somebody else, and you look at this person and you see the most magnificent human being ever. You see somebody that you have absolutely compelled to reach out to connect with. You see this person as handsome or beautiful or intelligent or whatever, and they're standing in a room full of people who may or may not see them that way. The image your mind shows you is your own creation. It's not the essence of the world around you. The text goes on and asks, what do I mean by that? And then he answers, as you abide in your physical world, the greatest challenge that you have moment to moment and moment to moment is to be vigilant against identifying with the perceptions which are born and birthed as a result of the physical apparatus of the body itself. He's saying, the biggest challenge you're ever going to have, the greatest challenge you have moment to moment, is to realize what we were just talking about, what our neuroscience tells us, what Anil Seth will tell you in the videos that you can watch on YouTube about hallucinating our perception. The greatest challenge you're going to have is to wake up and realize you're not looking out through your eyes and seeing the world outside of you. You're seeing what your mind is creating. And it's being birthed as a result of the physical apparatus of the body itself and all of the perceptions that have been programmed into you. The text goes on and says, that is, you look out through a body. That is where your attention seems to be. Your apparatus, called your eyes, immediately shows you a world of objects separated by space. If you identify with that level of perception, you can only conclude that you are separate from one another. When you see events happening, it's absolutely impossible to see the subtle interconnection of all events. And you fall into the trap of forgetting that you live in the universe. And universe means simply one turning or one song, one event occurring, like an ocean is but one event, expressing as many waves. So too do all events in the field of space and time, in the field of physical matter, merely emerge from that one universe. Now, from the body's level of perception, the thinking mind, in association with the body, creates interpretations of what it believes it is seeing. And now your attention, your awareness, is already twice removed from reality. First, you have become hoodwinked, thinking that what the body's eyes show you is what is truly real and significant. For instance, you love someone. They are here today, and tomorrow they leave. You see them pack their things, and their body leaves. And your eyes show you that they are, quote, gone, close quotes. Then the mind says, quote, woe is me, I've lost my love, close quotes. Neither of these is true. The soul, the level at which reality is far deeper than the level of the body, the soul can never, quote, go, close quotes. It can't go anywhere. No one you have ever met or known can ever be outside of your heart through his or her own action. The body mind, yes, it can leave, but that is not what takes someone out of your heart. It can only be your decision to withdraw love. It is only the withdrawing of love that creates a separation in the experience of your awareness. So, you're now sitting two levels removed from reality. First, you have become hoodwinked, thinking that the physical eyes show you what is true. Then, you draw conclusions and create interpretations of the events the body's eyes show you. This creates the emotional effect that is like a soup that runs through you and around you, and it will remain so until it is healed. The third level of being removed from reality is the trick of the mind in which it insists that its interpretations are fact. It is to this level of mind that I asked within A Course in Miracles, quote, "Would you rather be right or happy?" close quotes. For happiness can only be the result of perfect trust. And perfect trust emerges from perfect loyalty. And perfect loyalty emerges spontaneously in the mind that has rested in surrender. We have spoken often of the keys to the kingdom. They are desire, intention, allowance, and surrender. In allowance, you go through a period of deep undoing in which you disconnect the wiring that has led you to insist on the rightness of the interpretations that you have created, and then linked to events that the physical body mind has perceived. There's deep questioning that needs to happen in allowance. There's deep understanding of the false nature of perception. So, as allowance is perfected, one has come to see that their whole world, everything they have constructed, has been undone. That is, your perception of belief, your perception of feeling nature, your perception of what is, has been undone. The mind is unraveled. Now, the perception of the body-mind, of course, goes on. The physical eyes seem to show you that there is someone in another body over there, and they're doing what they're doing, and you're doing what you're doing, so there cannot be any connection. That level goes on as long as there is a body. However, the mind that is healing does not identify that as the primary level of reality. So, as allowance surrenders the construct that has been made up in the mind, and it exists nowhere but in the mind, as allowance surrenders the construct that's been made up in the mind, one rests in an unobstructed allowance of how the body-mind goes through its days until it returns to dust. But there is no longer a, quote, a being that's hoodwinked, close quotes, no longer being attached, no longer being swept up with that level of identification, because there is no longer a need to identify with interpretations. And there is no longer, quite happily, any need to be right. This is a bone breaker for most people. This is one of the hardest parts of the reality management worksheet. This is why it's woven into the forgiveness pattern, to say over and over again, I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need for anyone or anything to change, including myself. I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need to know what rightness is, and I ask to be shown. Allowance surrenders the construct that has been made up in the mind. And by the way, that construct doesn't exist anywhere but in the mind that made it up. And when that happens, when that's been surrendered, a person rests in an unobstructed allowance of how the body-mind will go through its days until it returns to dust. I'm allowing. I'll let people still see me as a therapist. I'll let people still see me as a psychologist. I'll let people still see me as a person who's so idiotic he doesn't even know how to grow hair on top of his head. I'll let people, I'll let it go. I just don't identify with it. There's no longer being hoodwinked, no longer being attached, no longer being swept up with that level of identification, because there is no longer any need to identify with interpretations. And quite happily, there is no longer any need to be right. Imagine, and we were asked to imagine this many lessons ago in this book, imagine being able to have complete joy and bliss and happiness even when the bank account is emptied and the house crumbles around you, or you're out for a walk and you return and the house has been burned to the ground. Imagine being able to just watch it with a sense of calm and peace and understanding that this is simply the flow of life. And what your mind is doing with that, the energies that flow through your mind, they are not you. They're just something you can watch with mild or childlike curiosity. That the energies, the intense emotions, the sadness, the fear, the anger, the joy, the bliss states that your heart produces, they are not you. It's just a dance of energy. That you have the option to just sit back and watch the way you would enjoy a play or a movie or read a good novel or watch a sunset. When you have worked allowance to its fullness, then you surrender the constructs your mind has made up that don't exist anywhere but in your mind. And you rest in unobstructed allowance. And you let the body-mind be what it is. The same body that a week or two ago you were railing at because it's overweight or it's not pretty enough or it's not as handsome as you were when you were in your 20s. That same body, now you just let it be. And you allow it to be fully what it is, and you remain in your peace. And that body will be what it is until it returns to dust. But there is no longer being hoodwinked into thinking that you have to identify with it. There's no longer being attached to it. There's no longer being swept up with that level of identification, because there's no longer any need to identify with labels and judgments and perceptions and interpretations. Things are greeted as they are with allowance. And quite happily, there is no longer any need to be right. As allowance comes to completion, the text goes on and says, as allowance comes to completion, something quite magical occurs. It is beyond all comprehension of the thinking mind. So please, do not try to wrap your mind around this. Do not try to imagine what this would be like. Just work at allowance. How do you work at allowance? You scan your body-mind unit energy system for the earliest warning signs of tension and upset and judgment and constriction, and you breathe and soften and release it. And then you move back into that state of allowance. You can't make allowance happen. You can't make your mind do this or that. You can step back and allow without trying to control. You can step back and observe and appreciate the flow of life energy. Back to the text. As allowance comes to completion, something quite magical occurs. It is beyond all comprehension of the thinking mind. That may be one of the more critical statements in this entire book. What you're going to step into if you use the keys to the kingdom, desire, intention, allowance, surrender, and eventually humility, you will step into an experience that is beyond all comprehension of the thinking mind. The next sentence reads, the ego could never comprehend this. Exclamation point. It is as though something that was existing because it was contracted in fear dies and dissolves like the mist before a rising sun. And all that is left is a quiet spaciousness in which awareness has been purified. You're just aware. You're not in contraction. You're not in denial. You're not in judgment. You're not in a belief that this is right or wrong, good or bad. It's just awareness. So we'll leave it there. We're halfway through page 354 in the book, lesson 31. And just watch what's going on in your mind as your mind is getting exposed to thoughts about things your mind can never comprehend. What's your mind doing when you hear that? Your ego will never begin to reach understanding. That'll wrap up our reading for the day. We've just got a minute or two or three left before hopefully Michael or Jeannie joins us to take over the second hour of the show. Here's hoping that this is somewhat useful. It's the paradox of our lives, the idea that we're living in a culture, as Einstein told us, where we've been given a precious gift and a faithful servant, but we live in a culture that has forgotten the gift and elevated the servant to the level of master. What's the precious gift is our intuitive mind, our ability to step into desire, intention, allowance, surrender, and humility, and let it reveal to us our true nature and the will of our creation. And yet we live in a culture that doesn't teach us to do that. And we have this faithful servant, this useful tool, this very simple tool, the conscious logical mind. But we live in a culture that has elevated that servant or simple tool to the level of master. And here in lesson 31, once again, the way of mastery is encouraging us to understand that that will only, always and forever, keep us bound up in conflict and consternation and upset. To try to figure it out, Michael Rice says, that's the number one pseudo-solution of the non-being mind. That is not a spiritual practice. That is not your higher self trying to figure things out. Your higher self would probably do what the lesson 31 is titled, placing your trust and loyalty in the energy of creation itself. So that wraps up our show for today. This is a weekend, so we will be back on Monday. I would like to remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And hopefully, in the very near future, I'll be able to welcome Jeannie Rice. Our call-in number again is 563-999-3581. And or you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@yagain.org. That's whyagain.org. I'm texting Jeannie now to see if there's a problem, as my clock ticks down to the last few seconds before the second hour is scheduled to begin. And sometimes when this has happened in the past, Michael has been trying to get in, so I will hang up and watch the board, and maybe that will allow Michael to get in. Blessings.
So, welcome to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio, and today is Friday, December 2nd, 2022. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael just a minute to dial in. I will invite you to go to the website. Oh, apologies, I'm out of breath. I ran up the steps. If you go to whyagain.org, you're going to find several places. I try to put it where everybody could find it easily. If you go under Start Here or the Bullseye, or if you click on the app or worksheets or multimedia, there's our news, you're going to find two videos that we did on YouTube. One of them walks you through step by step how to do the, I just got a text from Dr. Tim. So one of them walks you through step by step how to navigate the website, how you can find different things, where things are located. The second one will help you navigate and use the app. It will, I actually go through and click and let you look at how we fill in the blanks on the app and how it carries your answers forward into other places. And so you can look at both of those videos on our website. Hope that those are of some help to you if you have trouble navigating either one of those. Please do download the app if you haven't already. It's free from your Play Store, whether it's Google Play Store or whether it's your Apple Store. It's free on both devices, on your tablets. You can also do the worksheets online. It will redirect you over to my website for doing that, but that was only because I had fewer pages to mess up. I had less pages to have to try to correct than we do on the Why Again site. So anyway, everything so far is going really well with both of those. Let me know if you run into something that's not working right for you. Send me the URL or the link and let me know what's going on with it, and I will correct it. I also found some things as I was going through explaining the website the other day that I needed to update. Like, for instance, you know, we had a section on the website about being attending intensives at Heartland and the support team that's at Heartland, and also the community that originally was going to take place at Heartland, and some of those things have changed, you know, with the times, and the people that were going to head up certain projects are no longer there, so I had to make those changes. So if you find something on the website that seems out of date or is no longer, you know, relevant, then please let me know what you've run into, and I'll correct that as well. And I'm going to see if Michael's having challenges getting on. I'm not sure. Anyway, so again, our call-in number, 563-999-3581, and press 1. Hope that you're getting ready for your holy days. Just talking to Aria on her when I picked her up from school on the way back here. They attended the Christmas parade last night, and it was really cold, wasn't it? But they had the Clydesdales here. Oh, good for you. Thank you for sharing. Anyway, I'm not sure what holdup is for Michael here. Let me just walk in the other room. Are you having difficulties getting on? Says he's having a little challenge, so we'll give him just another moment. And so we hope that you're putting the tools to work in your life and hope that you're seeing a difference. Let us know. That's why we're here 5 days a week, to answer any questions that happen to pop up
Michael and I are going to take a couple of days. We're leaving Sunday and driving over to, there's a place called Hot Springs, North Carolina. It's only about an hour and a half from here. And so we're going to stay Monday and Tuesday. Well, we're Sunday night and Monday night. We're coming back on Tuesday. But those 2 days, Monday and Tuesday, will be pre-recorded shows. They're actually from the book club where Michael walked Yinka through doing a process. So that will be on both of those days. But we will not be live. So please ask your questions today. We'll be back with you live on Wednesday. So I see he's with us now. Welcome, Michael. I think he's with us.
Thank you, dear heart. I am with you. Just had to push my mute button. And welcome, everybody. Delighted, honored that you're here, that we get to move forward one more time in bringing this whole process of forgiveness into minute awareness so that we can really, truly step into the awesomeness that is human life. I was processing with someone this morning, and we were talking about how somebody was a problem in their lives, and we really touched into the way the universe is set up. It's such a genius setup and such a genius structure. And we based it in the whole idea of the law of resonance. And there's a device that, an holistic wellness device, you know, a device that helps with pain management and circulation. It's called a Beamer. And someone has a Beamer and an Avicen, and we were talking about resonance and how that device works. And when you listen to her, when you hear what the law of resonance is, and it's just so genius the way the whole universe is set up. It's like, wow, when you start to see into it. So if I hold a middle C tuning fork in my hand, you know, I'm in probably in a grade 10, and they put a tuning fork in my hand and said, well, what can the tuning fork do? And I said, nothing. And just sitting there in my hand, it's like, well, okay, so I have another middle C tuning fork, and I'm going to strike it here on the desk, and I'm going to put it close to the tuning fork in your hand. What's going to happen? Well, without being touched, the second tuning fork is going to move. So this is the law of resonance, the law of energy exchange. When two energy systems have matching atomic magnetic structures, there's an exchange of information between them. So I was explaining to her how what happens with the Beamer is that if you have a microcirculatory vessel, and we've got between 40 and 60 trillion of them within our bodies, and they're anywhere from about a tenth to maybe a hundredth or so the thickness of a hair. So a pretty small blood vessel. And the blood cell has to move through that vessel in order to be to the cell. So the cell gets the oxygen nutrition that the blood cell's carrying. And then the blood cell, having emptied its load, can pick up waste to remove it from the cell. And so what we talk about is, once again, resonance. You know, that capillary has a certain frequency. And what the folks who created the Beamer in a genius way did was they came up with a frequency that matches the capillary. You know, the average person who lives in sympathetic dominance, lives in fear, fight, fright, freeze mode, ends up with circulation being slowed within these vessels. And then if you eat the SAD diet, standard American diet, you're eating all the garbage, you know, cheap oils that come from vegetables, which are really a disaster for the most part, that blood vessel gets junked up. And, you know, the same way as if I have a hose and I'm trying to put water through it, but the hose is stuffed with sand, the water doesn't, you know, just drips through. What do? I'm going to bang the hose on the table until the sand comes loose and comes out of the hose. Well, in the same way, what the resonance does with this device is it resonates, it sets up a frequency that matches the capillary. So the capillary starts to oscillate, starts to move, just like tapping it against a dresser or something, or a piece of wood, starts to loosen the gunk that's in it. So that improves microcirculation. So that's one way it works. And the reason we ended up in that conversation is someone else had gotten a device that's called PEMF. And it's like, yeah, that's great. Well, it does the same thing. Well, no, actually. The thing that Beamer did was they patented the frequency that comes out of this device that creates that resonance. And it's kind of like, you know, if I brought an opera singer into the room that can hit the right note, I have a glass in my hand and the glass breaks. Now, I can bring 1,000 wonderful opera singers, people who just sound fabulous, but only the one who can hit the resonant note can create the energy exchange that causes the energy to transfer to the glass. The glass starts to quiver, too much energy, and it shatters. Well, the capillary starts to quiver, and the junk gets shaken out of it. And along comes, so what's the difference? So along comes the Avicen. The Avicen works on a totally different principle. What it does, it injects heat into the bloodstream. And there are muscle fibers at the head of each capillary. And so what happens is the muscle fiber, if people live in fear, you know, we talk about people being uptight. This is sympathetic dominance. People who live in that sympathetic dominant state, uptight, just, you know, imagine the person who's uptight. What is it? Their shoulders are pulled up, their fists are clenched, their jaws are clenched, everything's locked up. That means microcirculation is locked up. Those muscle fibers shut down the flow into the capillary. And, of course, that helps the flow to become stagnant. When there isn't a flow, then gunk accumulates and end up with problems with that. And what the Avicen does is pours heat into the bloodstream through the hands. There's a heat exchange in the palm of the hand. And what it does is it injects heat into the bloodstream. It's interesting, when the blood leaves your hand, it takes about 3 minutes to circulate throughout your body and get back to the hand again. So within about 10 minutes, the whole volume of blood in the body has gone through the hand. And therefore, it's been heated by about 1 degree. And when you put warm blood over those muscle fibers at the head of 60 trillion capillaries, then those muscle fibers start to soften and open and allow more blood flow. So they're sort of complementary. But it all works on the principle of resonance. And everything works that way. If there is, you know, the other day we talked about how when we go into denial, we literally compress energetic patterns that we don't want to look at. A thought comes up that's associated with pain, and I say, I don't want to deal with that pain, and so I squash it back down. I compress it. But when I compress it, I'm compressing a frequency. I'm compressing an energy. And, of course, to compress it, I have to press energy into it. When I press energy into it, I strengthen the amplitude of the energy, and by holding it down, I cause that energy to be pushed out. It's kind of like a, you know, when there's a flood, if the soil can't absorb the rain that's coming down, it flows off to the side. Well, in a similar fashion, when we deny and dissociate from something, we press that energy down, and now you have a high energy wave radiating it out from a person's mind. I had the blessing back, this goes back 35 years or so ago. I used to keynote at a conference called Global Science. And one year, a gentleman named Marcel Vogel came to the conference. Marcel was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. He's the man who, at 11 years of age, invented chemical light, invented and patented it. You know, you go to a football game and you buy a light stick and there's a plastic tube, and inside are two either plastic or glass tubes, and you break them both, and the chemicals mix, and it lights up. Marcel invented that at 11, and his family didn't have the money to patent it, so Marcel at 11 patented his invention. He went to work for IBM. Actually, the reason your computer works is because Marcel Vogel invented the magnetic coating that stores information on your hard drive. That's the only reason we have computers today. Pardon me, not the only reason, but it's a major factor if we couldn't store that information. So that was Marcel's invention. That's the kind of mind that he had. Unfortunately, he didn't own that patent because he worked for IBM, so it was IBM's property, but Marcel invented it. And when I met Marcel, he had retired from IBM, and he was at this conference, and he brought a thing called a Delaware camera and was demonstrating. So Delaware camera is a device that does not work like an ordinary camera. When you open the shutter, light energy comes in, and it gets registered on the photographic plate. But rather, between the photographic plate and the aperture, there's a tuning mechanism. Kind of like a radio, you know, you tune to a certain frequency and you get to listen to a certain station. You change the tuning, you listen to another station. Well, this camera had that tuning mechanism between the aperture where the light comes in and the photographic plate. So you could tune this camera to certain frequencies. And then when you open the shutter, if that frequency was present, it would register on the photographic plate, picked up not by a device that mimics our eye, but picked up by a device that resonates in the level of mental frequencies. So Marcel showed us the pictures. He could take a picture of the high energy wave that leaves the mind when we think a thought. Well, of all the mind energy that you've got within you, and I'd offer that everything that is, every thought that is in you is a resonating energy, which ones do you suppose are going to go out the strongest and reach the farthest? It's going to be the ones you hide from yourself. It's going to be the ones you don't want to deal with. It's going to be the ones you fear to look at. There's an interesting message that Job gave us as he's going through his healing process. And he gives us the insight, oh, that which I feared most has come upon me. How did that happen? Because what I feared, I compressed as an energy within me, which means I pressed it out. I set up a high energy wave that sent out a message. And the only people who would be attracted to me are the people who were in resonance with that energy wave. So it's such a genius way to create healing. You know, my take is the universe, the creator, whatever term you want to use for it, abhors us being diseased. And so it's the whole game is so set up that when you set up an energy field that is of a dis-ease nature, you're sending out a high energy wave that's calling to all the world. World, I need somebody here who knows how to resonate this hidden energy in me. And somebody's going to show up. They're going to do the behavior that resonates that energy you've compressed. And my offering is that the universe is set up so that we can't hold on to our diseases. At least, I guess we, yeah, no, that's a mistake. We can hold on to our diseases, but the universe is going to give us as many opportunities as we need to work through those things that we're holding on to. So if I'm setting up a high energy wave, you know, somebody says, I hate you, and what I wanted was to be cherished by them, and I have hurt in my mind's file system on being cherished, I send out a high energy wave that holds hate in that idea of being cherished. And so I'm literally, I like to call it the psychic megaphone or the creative wave, I'm sending out a wave that says, hey, world, is there anybody here who knows how to resonate this hate in me? And somebody's going to show up. Law of resonance, the way the universe works. We understand those laws of energy. They apply everywhere. So when this person shows up to do the behavior And you might just check it out. Have you ever gone into somebody's space, totally committed to being loving, nurturing, and caring, and then all of a sudden found yourself doing things that you go, oh, my God, why did I do that? Things you say, I would never do that. And bang, there it is. Why did you shift out of that loving, caring, nurturing space? Because the person at the high energy wave that needed the matching bag of garbage that you had resonated that in you. Now, many people say, well, I did it. Oh, so then I did it because of what they said or were holding. No, I didn't do it because of what they were holding. I did it because what they were holding resonated what I was holding. And that's why in our Healing Through Relationships workshop, we talk about relationships where people have matching bags of garbage. They're perfect. Because those relationships that are based in matching bags of garbage will bring us every opportunity we need to decompress and forgive, remove those traumatic energies. However, what happens is most people live in denial. And remember, our definition of denial is when I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me. So this person shows up that resonates my hatred. And when they do, I talk about how they made me hateful. Well, you know, the only thing way I can do hateful is if inside of me there is this energy of hate. It's got to be moving in me in order for me to feel it, in order for me. If I've denied and dissociated from it, then I'll draw somebody in to play it out with me. And when they play it out with me, they resonate that. Because I'm in denial and I've dissociated from that content in my mind, I will use that very hidden content and massage it into a picture of them. And so they will, literally in my perceptual construct, they'll show up in my mind with my problem attached, and I'll swear that it must be their problem. Now, have you ever gone into somebody's space, committed to being loving and nurturing, and found yourself doing something different, something other than being loving? You did that because that something other than being loving was in you, and it matched or resonated with that person that you did the behavior toward. And sadly, because most people are unconscious of the process by which perception occurs and the cause of feelings, because we've externalized all of that, one person who's angry says, you made me mad, and the person who's afraid says, you made me afraid. So now each person with their own bag of garbage is pointing at their partner or the other person, blaming them for what's going on inside of them. And this tends to create separation. So if somebody moves into a relationship with someone, and let's say the person who's the subject of our conversation has hate and rage and fear and guilt and grief and condemnation and gossip and slander and vengeance, that they are so cut off from, so don't want to feel or deal with, over a very short period of time, generally, a partner will tend to start to do behaviors that will resonate that. And what most people do when that occurs is they literally make pictures of other people out of those energetic patterns. And once that picture's made of another person, they swear the problem must be them. And they end up hooking up the pained parts of their own minds to their brain's image of their partner. And now we've got trauma going. Now we've got crazy time going. And what this work is about is to recognize that if I'm feeling it, it belongs to one person, and that one person is me. And when I recognize that that's me, and that's an energy that's moving in me, I have the opportunity to collapse perceptual construct that tells me that it's all about somebody else. And I get to, collapse, I've got a frog in my throat. I get to collapse that construct that holds that pain through forgiveness. And I get to touch into the energy that's moving in me that belongs to me. And with the opportunity to do that, healing occurs. And so my offering is that the universe is here to heal us. The universe knows exactly what it is that you're hiding from yourself, exactly what it is that you're dissociating from in yourself, and what it is that you need to forgive, the energy that you need to compress within yourself. And so when you do that, the whole game starts to change. When you decompress the energy in yourself, which is what happens with forgiveness, then you get in touch with that energy that was resonated by that person. And you get the opportunity to heal. You get the opportunity to change that part of your mind. And that change occurs through forgiveness. Not the act of letting somebody else off the hook because that particular energy is moving in you, but rather recognizing that that energy that's moving in you belongs to you. And when I cancel the goal that's driving the process, my false perception collapses in on itself. And when it collapses in on itself, that gives me access to the deepest hidden parts of my own dissociated mind. And when I bring that forward in the presence of love, then healing occurs. People get into a conflict and somebody says, well, I'm out of here, I'm leaving. Why are they leaving? Oh, they'll have a whole story. The person leaves have a whole story about how it's your fault that I'm leaving. You see, I did this because, and the truth is, they're leaving because the internal pain is too much for them to look at. The dissociation is so deep. And oftentimes, if a suggestion is made, well, why don't you look at this? You know, they'll just laugh at you and go, no, that's not true about me. It's you that's doing this. I'm only leaving because of you. I'm only exiting this conversation because of you. Excuse me? Nobody has ever exited a conversation because of anybody else. Well, yeah, but they're just so crazy and traumatic. And it's like, well, okay. So they're crazy and traumatic and you're leaving. You know, there's an old question I like to ask. If they're the one with the problem, why are you the one with the pain? You see, if you didn't have a problem in that situation, you would be connected to the awesome active presence of love. Energetically, you would see the beauty of what's moving in them, the trauma that's moving in them, the opportunity they've got to learn forgiveness, the opportunity they've got for healing, and you'd simply be the space for that. But when you turn to run away, when you want to escape, well, you tell a story about them, the story's always a lie, because the perceptual constructs of your mind always reflect for you the content of your mind. They always tell you first and foremost about you, though the picture that it forms, because you're in blame of someone else. You know, we've got that one world religion that so many people talk about, being afraid of Satan going to bring this one world religion. The one world religion is alive and well and has been alive and well on planet Earth for thousands of years. And the one world religion is the religion of blame. So when one speaks in terms of blame, I'm only doing this because of what you did, they're lying to themselves. They're dissociating. And denial means, in order to pretend that something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, I have to hide the cause of what's moving inside of me. How do I do that? It's a frequency. It's an energy. Press it. When I compress it, I'm now, to the degree that I compress it and dissociate from it, to that degree, I set up a high energy wave, a psychic megaphone message that calls somebody in to do it to me. Again and again and again, until I decide to decompress that in me. And then somebody shows up doing the same thing, and I look and go, oh boy, I can remember when I used to be really upset when something like that happened. But having healed that in me, I can stand there and go, gee, that looks pretty heavy duty. Can I support you in healing? Rather than insisting you receive my story about you, because this is really all your problem and all your fault. So that's the game of resonance. That's how that process works. And when I look at the source of this work 2,000 years ago, most people would call him a theologian, but I see a physicist. I don't see a theologian. I see a physiologist. I don't see a theologian. I see a geneticist. Sins of the fathers are past. That's genetics. I see a psychologist. Take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. The heart is the unconscious. Look at your own unconscious to look for what you've denied and dissociated from and clean it out. Otherwise, you live in that unconscious space, which was also called the desert. And most people spend about 40 years or so in that desert before they even start to suspect that maybe there's something else going on here. Maybe this situation is an opportunity for me. And so here we are, applying the tools to get the best possible outcome from every circumstance or situation that we meet in our worlds. And what forgiveness does, when someone shows up that resonates one of those dissociated parts of your mind, forgiveness, instead of keeping that dissociated part compressed and hidden, pressed down, it allows it to expand, to open up. And now somebody's in full-blown relationship with that which maybe they and maybe 1,000 other ancestors through the generations have been hiding from themselves. To be able to bring those things forward and free ourselves is the whole objective of this work, and in particular, the objective of the process of forgiveness. And I think G probably mentioned it. I had a little trouble getting on the phone at the start of the show, but she's done a really awesome new video on how to use the Why Again website and the instructions for how to use the Heartland Aramaic Mission Forgiveness app. If you go to your app store on your phone and you type in Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, Forgiveness, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. It's a free download. Download it. You can do the whole forgiveness process right there on your phone. And Jamie walks you through in this video. So the way to get to the video is there are actually, she put it in several different places on the website, but the easiest way to explain it, I think, is just go to whyagain.org. And in the upper left-hand corner of the page, there's a button that says, it's right all the way up in the left-hand corner, it says Start Here. You click the Start Here button, and the first thing you'll see is how to navigate the website and how to utilize the app. And she just goes step. It's really an awesome video that she did step by step through the whole worksheet process, as well as if you've ever gotten on her website, gee, I don't know how to find things. I don't know where things are. She's got another video right there with that one where she walks you right to every page on the website. Well, not every page because there are over 20,000, but all the core pieces of the website she lays out, and here's where you find this, and here's how you get to that, and here's how you get to that. And so easy peasy instructions, and thank you for that, Jeannie. It's awesome. Beyond that, we're just a little better than the halfway point through the show. I think I've done enough talking, and so I'm going to open the space. Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
Give me half a second. We actually have a little girl with paint everywhere, so I was helping her clean up. So let me walk back in here. I hope we have a hand up. But we do not. Somebody press one.
If you're out there in listener land, how can we support you? What's on your mind? Did that explanation about resonance make sense? And does that leave you with any thoughts, questions, challenges If you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, if you call 563-999-3581, you'll be listening to the show directly. And then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel. And Jeannie will know you want to talk to us, and she'll introduce you by your area code. So push 1. Let's have a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind?
While we're waiting for somebody to press 1, I'll also say that on the website under Global Online Book Club, I had had those going to our Vimeo site, and yesterday Michael said they were on our YouTube site. So I went out and uploaded all of those to YouTube, and I changed all those links. So if you go to whyagain.org, up in the upper right corner, you'll see the little icon for Facebook and for Vimeo and for YouTube, the third one over. And so if you click on YouTube, and then there's also one for the podcast, but if you click on the YouTube one, it will take you to our YouTube channel where you can access all of the, you know, What is the World, all of the book club archives are out there now. There are samples of almost every workshop. There are the keys to living, not saying the Lord's Prayer. There's just lots and lots of videos out there.
There are probably more than 100 videos on there now.
There are. Let's see if it'll tell me how many. It doesn't tell me how many.
In any event, there are several dozen videos there that, you know, if you're really wanting to get into depth in the work, and I was actually going through one today. I don't know whether we have. I did an interview about a year ago with a gentleman named Ben, what was Ben's last name? Rogers. And he's actually the manager of a medical office in Kingsport, and they do a podcast called Outside the Box. And they interviewed me because they want to look at forgiveness and healing. He's the son of a medical doctor. And I hadn't listened to that since I did that video last year, but I happened across it and listened to it. And it is one of the best and the most concise explanations of the whole, 30 minutes, the whole Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop is right there. So if that one's, I'm just thinking, I think that was still on their site. I'm not sure whether we've got that one. Ben Rogers and Outside the Box is the name of the video. Let's see. I actually put it on my Facebook page today, too. So I think I can find the link to it. Yeah, it's the title of it, if you look on Facebook, is The Health Benefits of Forgiveness on YouTube, if you look there. And I don't know whether that's on our two channels, sweetie, or not. But anyway, let's grab it and put it there if you can find that. It's actually just on my Facebook page. It's the first one up on the Facebook page. So if we can find that, and if it's not on the site, then let's put it there.
And we have over 2,000 videos, because there's 30 per page and there's 81 pages. So
2,000 videos on YouTube?
30 videos per page, and it says that we have, let's see here. Well,
I don't think we've got that many.
Anyway.
I think there's maybe something. Anyway, we'll see if we can get this one hooked in there too. So it's on the, but just go, you can just go to YouTube and access the page directly. Just put in Michael Rice, MICHAELRY space RYCE. And you'll be right there on our YouTube channel. and you can start watching videos.
Or you can click the little icon on top of our website.
Right. Right. You can go to whyagain.org, and over on the right-hand side, there's a set of social media icons. Just click the YouTube icon, and you will be on our YouTube page. And beyond that, what's on your mind? How can we support you? Let's have a conversation. I'm finished with my monologue. And so I would love to hear somebody's voice.
We have two hands.
Well, let's go for it.
First one is Doug, 314. You're on the air.
Hey, young man. Welcome. Haven't heard your voice in a while. Are you mute challenged,
sure.
Doug? We can't hear you.
No,
oh,
I think that was all my fault.
Okay.
Oh, okay, good. I didn't think
hey,
I
welcome,
was.
Hey, welcome, young man.
Hello. Good to say hello to you both.
Yeah, good to hear your voice. What's exciting in your world?
Well, I was listening to your conversation about resonance and resonance matching bags of garbage and relationship and so on. And, of course, I imagine we can also bring our own, I don't know, bring our own into the situation where, but the question for me is that, or the reason I'm calling at this point is I continue to really, how can I say this? I struggle with my feeling that the relationship that I had for a long time, the longest I've ever had, is important and valuable and something I would like to save, and I can't unilaterally do that. I can't
right.
make that happen. And so I'm wondering a couple of things, but from the I'm sure whatever has to surface will surface, but I'm thinking in terms of resonance and the law of resonance, and is there a relationship going on where as I wanted to get married, and which is what she was saying she wanted, she moved away from me and progressively moved away from that position to now I just want to be friends forever and, you know, or whatever, maybe, you know, it's like I, that's one question. And the other is just thoughts on what I can do.
I didn't hear a question there, Doug. I didn't hear
okay.
a question there. Can you be more
is
precise?
There a law
your
of resonance, is there a law of resonance dynamic that's apparent between my attachment to the relationship, my desire, my thought that it's the highest thing that could happen for me in my life, and I kind of tend to tie it in as some kind of divine thing too, which I'm starting to think is probably false, but I think, oh, it's the right thing, you know, in some bigger way than I am. And her moving away from that after wanting marriage, and then finally when I was willing to do the three-way limited contract, it's like around that time she started to move away from me. And so it's like an inverse resonant relationship perhaps going on there or something. I don't know. So that's the first question. Is that clear?
I think I've got it, yes. So here would be my input. Most often, relationship issues for one or both people in the relationship go back to power person dynamics. So if you were to sum up a message that you could put into her mouth to you about why she's moved away and not interested in marriage any longer, what would the message be to you? What would she be saying to you?
Well, I have to preface my answer by saying that this is a question that has been relatively unanswered for me. It's like I don't understand the answer. But the best I can do, the part of it that I do understand, is that it has to do with money. You're not providing me with the security I need financially so that if something happens to me, I know that I'm okay because you're making enough money to take care of us both. That piece I can see. And if I look for some other reason, I want to just go back to a text that she gave me if I can find
well,
it pretty quickly
well,
that I think
well,
might
tell
help.
You what, rather than, well, you look at that. Let's talk about this message then. So
okay.
Let me ask, if you were to look back at your relationship with your parents, was there ever a message that you could perceive going between them of, you're not doing a good enough job of something here, perhaps financially or perhaps otherwise?
Well, there was, certainly was, from my father to my mother, that she's not doing a good enough job of keeping the house clean and orderly and clutter-free. That was always a point of contention. You know, like, I work all day and come home and, you know, you've just been playing and, you know, the house isn't the way I think it should be. That was a major contention.
So the message to Mom was, you're not working
you're not
hard enough to produce the result that I want.
Yep.
So the message I hear you getting in that relationship is, you're not working hard enough to produce the result that I want. In this case, it's money. In Dad's case, it was clean house or whatever all the dynamics were. That probably wasn't the sole dynamic, but you're not doing it well enough in order to make me happy. Good breath.
Yes.
What was that thought? What just moved?
Well, you're not providing. You're not a good enough provider. You're not providing for me the way I want to be provided for. And I can't say that she's wrong. You know, but I don't know. I just, yes. I guess the breath is, oh, yeah, that message.
So,
was from
how many
my mother.
Word sheets?
That was inverted between my parents, but it was there.
Yeah. Okay. So how many worksheets have you done where you've canceled your need to be approved of by her or seen as good enough in this arena of providing?
I don't think I've done any on that subject.
Bingo.
Yeah. Okay, great.
So I'd say there's a starting point.
Yeah, that's the answer to that one. Okay.
So that would include worksheets. It would look like the goal for her would be to see you as good enough even if you're not producing money. So how about a mind shifter for that one?
Okay. Yes.
The person I have cherished most in my life embraces and approves of me even when I fail. So what was that little giggle in there?
Well,
and that holding of the breath.
It's like, wouldn't that be nice? Or I would really like that to be true. Or that would really be awesome if it were so. It's more an expression of a deep emotional desire and need for that to be true.
Right.
So I do want that to be true, which shows how I must not have that in me enough, which in this moment, let me just finish this, is one of the big issues, I can kind of relate it back to something else that she has said, which is that she's too important to me. It's like the relationship should be the icing on the cake, not the main dish. And to her, I make her too important. She's too important to me. And so for me to think that I need her, that it would be immensely releasing and good and nurturing for me if she accepted me even when I fail. I can just feel how much I want that emotionally, which shows me how I guess I don't feel confident about that myself or something like that, which is related to what she's saying.
Right. So now, remember that about 99.9999999% to 11,000% of the time, these just go back to power person dynamics. So was there ever a message from your power person that you weren't doing it good enough? Or you couldn't do it good enough? We're designed, we are birthed into the world as this awesome, beyond comprehension sensation of being love. Like just beyond sweetness and light and, you know, I mean, it just, there aren't enough descriptors. And that's how we're designed to experience ourselves. It's called living in enthusiasm, in theos, which literally means in love, in God. And the first message that most children get from their power person that breaks that connectedness is, you're broken, there's something wrong with you. Can you tap into what that message was from your power person about you being broken?
I think you can't do it right. I mean, the first thing that came to mind before I recognized it in my parents was the church. Like you're from my church upbringing, clearly the message, that's the first one that came in to me. And then I realized there's a deeper, more suppressed one from my mother. So the church one is, you're fallen,
you're broken,
evil, you're wicked,
you're a sinner,
bad, you're broken, yep. You always will be a sinner, and you can never be not. Okay, and then and you always have to try
the
your
biggest
best,
lie ever told. The biggest lie ever told, Doug. The biggest lie ever told is that one.
Right. Yes, I've come to know that intellectually, but I haven't come to be able to heal this. This discussion shows me that I have not come to embrace that in my emotional body or heal it in my emotional body. And then that was reflected parentally from my mom, just always, you know, whenever I didn't perform or do, or, you know, whenever I did the wrong thing, you know, punishment, getting hit, spanked, you know, all of that stuff. I don't see it so much from my father. He was different from her in that respect. But for me, I can remember getting in trouble a lot because I didn't meet her expectations. So that's the answer to that. And the value that I'm seeing right now immensely is how much, even though I really believe very strongly, and maybe that's part of the reason I've been so attracted to understanding the idea that we are all love and we are worthy, but that even though I see that, feel it, teach it, believe it, it's not integrated into my child.
Right.
Where
well,
the power
and
person dynamic
what,
and the church is concerned. Go ahead,
so
I'm sorry.
No, you're right on track. When that message is given, that being called love that is designed to be in ecstasy, connected to love, 24/7, 365, with sweetness and bliss beyond comprehension, designed to be there 24/7, 365, is ripped out of that state by the thought disorder fed by the power person that you're broken, there's something wrong with you. And then there's a progression that goes through that. Do you remember the chart titled The Physiological Effects of Emotional Suppression?
Yes, I do.
So you might want to dig that out and go to the website, because you may not have the latest one. I've done some work on it since the early days when I taught it.
Okay.
And we get into specific thoughts, kind of patterned thoughts. The first one is, you're broken. The second one usually is, because we don't have words big enough to describe in our language, because it's been so pressed away and hidden by churches, by authorities, by governments. We don't have words big enough to describe the state of being in relationship with love as we're designed to be. I mean, if I were to say it's heaven, it's bliss, it's joy, it's delight, it's physiological pleasure, it's the moon and the stars are feeding me such deep bliss, it's like I can hardly stand it. It's so blissful. That's where we're designed to live. And when that first thought disorder is given, you're broken. We break link with that. And it hurts like hell, because it is hell. And churchianity has given us the thought, the reason you're there is because it's your default. You're to blame. You're broken. That's why God doesn't love you. Or, well, God loves you, but, you know, you're separated now and you're fallen and it's lost. But Doug, that direct experience of that state is in you under those thought disorders that have been compressed. If you imagine, imagine a thought is like a giant spring. And so here I am in this ultra bliss state, physiological, emotional, spiritual delight. And somebody brings in a thought, you're broken, and I pay attention to that, and there's this coiled spring called you're broken. And I can't handle that. It's too painful. And so I hold my breath, and I compress that spring. It's 12 inches long, and I compress it down to where it's about a 16th of an inch. And having pressed it so hard, as I talked about earlier in resonance, now that thought disorder goes out to all the world and says, is there anybody in the world can show me how broken I am? And the person with the matching bag of garbage is going to show up and show you. Until you're able to literally decompress that 16th of an inch energy spring from that 16th of an inch, stretch it out to a foot, and experience directly all of the pain in it while you stay connected to love. And when you do that piece of work, you will be back in that state of ultra bliss, and a relationship with someone will just be the icing on the cake. But you got to put the cart before the horse to stay in pain. You have to reverse it in order to heal. You have to decompress. You have to let loose. And I'd suggest you grab that chart from the website, The Physiological Effects of emotional suppression. We're down to the last few seconds. Joe's going to cut us off, but we'll talk right through to the end and forget the outro. Go through that and look at the series of thought disorders that happen, because when one is in so much pain at having lost that connectedness, you know, they've talked about the pain of the separation from God. That's what it is. It's the separation from this blissful state of connectedness, love, beauty, sweetness, and everything else you could imagine that's constructive. It hurts so much that the next message from the power person is, why are you screaming and crying? If you don't stop crying, I'm going to give you something to cry for. In other words, you're not even given permission to experience your hurt or your pain. And that drops down the next level of deterioration of this energy system. And there's a series of thought disorders that are in that, on that chart. And I'd suggest you start looking at each one of those and how they fit for you, or if there's a variation on